least based on the short amount of time we'd spent together. He was acting strangely. "What's that?" Derek asked, clearly confused. "Are you going to the one on Broad? I've been meaning to check it out." Matt dashed away from me, grabbing his wallet, keys, and sunglasses from his desk.
"You have?"
The intensity of Derek Merrick's confusion quadrupled.
"I have,"
Matt responded curtly. Then, odd Professor Matt bumped my arm with his and tilted his head, saying, "Come on, Valkyrie, let's go." Chapter 8. DPE. The world's first disaster prediction engine. The goal being to make terrorism impossible. Source, Banjo.
"Do you watch Jack and Grace often?"
"Not as much as I'd like. I used to. I guess it's not unusual for me to watch Jack and Grace, but I haven't been babysitting much since Greg stopped traveling this spring." We were just 2 blocks from the Cuddle studio. I still didn't know why he'd decided to join me, but I didn't mind the company. In fact, I liked the idea of having someone with me, someone I could compare notes with once the experience was over.
"I like Fiona."
I glanced at him, finding his readiness to be honest refreshing. "I do, too."
"She used to babysit me. She's like my sister."
I smiled, thinking of my friend. "She's pretty great." He paused, then added,
"I don't understand why she married Greg."
That had my steps faltering for a split second. Readiness to be honest was one thing, but I hadn't quite grown accustomed to Matt's candor. He actually reminded me of Janie that way.
"They're so different. Greg is hilarious, but he can be..."
"Harsh?"
"Yes, exactly."
He nodded his agreement.
"He's sarcastic, and she's not."
"She can be." I thought back on the last few years of knitting nights, remembering a few of the doozies of which he'd foisted on the group. His lips twisted to the side.
"Anyway, it seems to work for them."
"He loves her," I noted. "They care about each other. A lot." Matt made a face, like love was a dirty word.
"I don't think caring about a person is a foolproof means to longevity in relationships. I care about my ex-wife. We cared about each other when we divorced. It wasn't enough to keep us married."
Again, I almost tripped over nothing. This time it was due to the offhanded mention of his ex-wife. "You were married?"
"Yes."
"When? For how long? How did you meet?" I was unable to stop the barrage of questions.
"I was 19. We met at MIT. I followed her to Caltech. Things were fine at first, and then they weren't. And then they fell rapidly apart when I entered industry."
He said with absolutely no malice or resentment in his tone, like he was telling me about an article he'd read. Matt walked with his hands in his pockets, with his sunglasses and Converse, wearing jeans and a t-shirt, hair askew. He looked even younger than he had when we first met. "How old are you?" I questioned abruptly, not sure why. "You have a PhD, so you've got to be late 20s.
"I'm 30. We've been divorced for 3 years. She's 4 years older than me."
"Huh." I inspected him anew. "So what happened with your wife?" He didn't respond right away, instead scratching his chin before saying flippantly,
"We never saw each other."
As though that explained everything. "Yeah, but a lot of married couples have long-distance relationships and they make it work."
"Ours wasn't long-distance. We lived together in the same house, but we never saw each other. 3 months passed and I realized I hadn't spoken to her in 3 months. Other than sleeping next to her, I hadn't seen her."
I made a face of shock, but then quickly suppressed it. "How is that possible?" Matt's eyebrows moved sporadically on his forehead, like he was trying to figure out what to say.
"Work, I guess. She's brilliant and passionate about her work. So am I about mine. We attempted to make time for each other, but it just made her miserable."
"Loving you made her miserable?" I asked incredulously, irritated on his behalf.
No, she felt like she'd worked really hard for her achievements, and being a woman in tech felt like she needed to work twice as hard to maintain her level of success. She was right. She did.
He met my irritated incredulity with excessive rationality. What do you mean? I watched his profile, my heart thumping with dread for some reason.
Instead of attending a conference, she stayed home with me for a weekend. I also took off work, which was rare. Then on Monday, she found out she'd been passed over for a project.
He sounded regretful. That's not your fault.
I know, it's the fault of society that ambition in women is punished, and that more is expected of them in order to prove themselves worthy. I didn't want that for her. I didn't want her to be punished for trying to make our marriage work.
I couldn't bring myself to ask him if it still troubled him, so instead I asked, "Do you think you two will find your way back to each other?" My heart hurt, and I fought the desire to touch him, lay a comforting hand on his arm, though he looked and sounded completely at peace with the situation. He smiled, but his sunglasses hid his eyes, so I couldn't tell if it was genuine or not.
I don't think so. She remarried within the year after our divorce. He's a great guy.
I almost choked on my shock. What does he do?
He used to be a barista at Starbucks to pay the bills, but he's an artist. A painter, extremely talented. Now he paints full time. He also makes a great cup of coffee.
You've met him?
Oh, yes. I stay at their house when I go back to the Valley.
The Valley?
Silicon Valley.
Oh. I was so confused, which likely explained why I had the audacity to ask, "Is that what you want? To find someone too? To get married again?"
Matt made a derisive sound in the back of his throat. Hell no.
He sounded alarmingly bitter, similar to how he'd sounded when debating with Fiona whether robots could replace parents. The bitterness was completely at odds with the brainy and peculiar Dr. Matthew Simmons he'd been back at his office, or the excessively reasonable guy who'd just discussed the dissolution of his marriage as though it were nothing more than a failed experiment. Actually, I suspected he would be more passionate about a failed experiment. Yes, I'd seen him angry when I'd coerced him into sharing his research, but this bitterness was something altogether different. It sounded almost hostile. I hadn't decided whether or not to ask for further details when he volunteered.
Marriage, forcing vows of eternity upon a person who won't be able to fulfill them, doesn't work for me. Read that book, don't want to read it again. Some people are worthy of a lifelong commitment, others are not. In my experience since the divorce, women will always demand I work less, which is problematic, as that is where my real interests lie. Some get to have that, to find fulfillment with other people, with their families, spouses, children, and that's fine. Good for them. But some people, like me, have their work, and that's enough.
I snapped my mouth shut, trying to school my expression and bite my tongue. His explanation was less acrimonious than the hell no, yet still colored with a similar shade of harsh obstinacy. I wondered if Matt Simmons was pretending he was over his ex-wife. Was that all it was? Pretending? Maybe he was a great pretender, because why else would he personally be so against romantic relationships?
We're here.
Matt pulled the door open for me, motioning for me to precede him. Thank you, I said numbly, still working through the surprising new details he'd just volunteered. In a distracted daze, I strolled to the counter, reminding myself to take note of our surroundings. The space resembled the front room to a day spa. An assortment of cosmetics lined the walls, massage oils, a basket of what looked like fur gloves sat next to another basket of silk scarves on a shelf with a handful of other textured and sensory products. May I help you? The receptionist glanced in our direction. Yes, I have an appointment with Jared. Marie? She asked, her eyes moving between her computer screen and me. Yes, that's me. She read something on her screen, her eyes jumping to mine. You're the reporter? That's right.
Do you have any walk-in availability? Matt asked, coming to lean on the counter next to me. The hostess moved her eyes to his, and they widened subtly with blatant appreciation. She reached for the braid over her shoulder and began playing with it.
Do you need a cuddler?
I think I must, he answered with over-exaggerated sincerity. She giggled. I fought not to roll my eyes.
Well, let's see.
Her tone was a tad breathy.
Giselle should be finishing up soon, and she's free until 4.
Giselle. Matt said the name like he was tasting it, deciding if he liked it or not.
She's great, the hostess said. Only the best for you.
Matt peered at her as though he distrusted her judgment. Okay, sure. Giselle it is.
Let me go grab Jared, she said to me as she stood, then to Matt. When Giselle's finished, I'll let her know you're here.
The hostess left to fetch my cuddle buddy just as a man and a woman came down the hall toward the waiting area. The woman was mid-20s, maybe even younger, dressed in yoga pants and a tank top. The man, dressed in jeans and a long-sleeve t-shirt, appeared to be in his 60s, his hair in the earliest stages of salt and pepper. They were smiling, but their smiles were muted, and hers was laced with compassion.
What do you think the age difference is there?
Matt lifted his chin toward the couple slowly walking toward the waiting room. I glanced at Matt, who was frowning like he disapproved.
Why does it matter? I asked.
Because he's putting his paws all over someone who could be his daughter.
I gave my head a subtle shake. First of all, professional cuddling is platonic, meant to provide comfort. Matt blinked, catching himself mid-eye roll, but mumbled, "Give me a break." And secondly, you don't know what's going on. Don't judge a situation you don't know anything about. He pressed his lips together, narrowing his eyes on me, but said nothing. Noting his surly expression, I turned, hoping to intercept the man before he left, noting that the cuddler had already disappeared back down the hall.
"Excuse me, sir." Stepping forward, I extended my hand. "I'm a journalist writing a story about unconventional touch therapy. I was hoping you'd be willing to answer a few questions. It should only take 5 minutes."
In all honesty, I had no idea how long my questions would take, but people were more likely to give you their time if you gave them a quote. The man hesitated, glancing at me, my hand, and then at Matt at my side. Pulling his jacket on, he slowly accepted my hand for a shake, still looking skeptical.
"I don't mind, I guess. I just don't want to share my name."
"Absolutely." I agreed immediately. It would be completely anonymous, and no pictures either.
"Okay, fine."
His gaze flickered down, then up, surveying me.
"What do you want to know?"
"Anything you're willing to share about your experience with professional cuddling? But we can start with your impetus for seeking it out. Do you mind telling me why you decided to use a professional cuddler?" The man scrutinized me for a beat, his expression somber, then said,
"My wife died 6 months ago. Brain tumor."
"I'm so sorry," I said, giving him a subdued, sympathetic smile. It was probably similar to the one he'd just received from his cuddler. He nodded, a flash of pain sparking behind his eyes.
"We didn't have any children, never wanted any. She was it for me, more than enough. She was my soulmate."
His eyes misted over, his words trembling. Clearing his throat and blinking away the moisture, he continued.
"I miss holding her hand, hugging her close as we fall asleep. That's what I miss the most. Without her, I feel lost, and I don't mind saying so. I heard about this place from a psychologist buddy, or maybe he's a psychiatrist, who knows, but he said maybe it would help me cope with my loss, so I gave it a try."
I made mental notes about the cadence of his voice, the color of his shirt, the way he nibbled at his bottom lip and paused between thoughts. "Does it help?" I asked softly.
"It does. I don't think people realize how lonely it is after having someone alongside you half your life, and then suddenly she's gone. Giselle is a really nice young lady, very compassionate.
I assumed Giselle was his cuddler. What do you do specifically with her? Do you hold hands?
Yes, we always hold hands, even if we do nothing else.
Anything else? Only if you're comfortable sharing, of course. He scratched his neck.
Sometimes she holds me while we're laying down. Sometimes we hug standing up. It's nothing to be ashamed of, at least I don't think so. It's a crutch for me. I don't have anyone else on this earth. What other choice do I have, other than being lonely?
What about dating? Finding another person? He shook his head, his mouth a resolute line.
No, I'm not ready for that. I don't know if I'll ever be ready. I can't betray Patty that way. And doing that wouldn't be very kind, would it? To another person, when I could never love them?
I nodded, seeing his point.
Anything else you need?
The man's sad eyes moved between Matt and me. No, thank you. I appreciate your time. I shook the man's hand again, moving out of his way so he could leave and turning to Matt once he was gone. Matt was nodding, very slowly, a thoughtful expression on his features. How are those judgy pants fitting now, Professor? I cocked an eyebrow at him. The side of his mouth hitched, his tone somber as he said, "Point made." Marie? We both turned at the sound of my name, finding the aforementioned Giselle glaring at me with barely controlled irritation. Yes? I turned to face her, prepared to explain that Rebecca, the owner of the studio, had given me approval to interview customers when we'd spoken on the phone earlier in the week. Her gaze slid to Matt and lost some of its hardness as her eyes moved over him. Are you the walk-in? He nodded, extending his hand toward her.
Yes, I'm Matt.
She gave him a small but genuine smile, accepting his handshake, before her eyes moved back to me. Like a switch, her features arranged themselves into a mask of intense irritation. Come with me, she said, spinning on her heel. Matt and I glanced at each other, but did as we were told, following the woman down the hall, past a series of doors. I glanced into the three rooms we passed, finding one was a break room and the other two looked like bedrooms. Giselle was waiting for us at the end of the hall, her frosty gaze moving over me as she opened the door to an office, revealing a man with long black hair speaking on the phone. He was also shirtless and barefoot, wearing red, loose-fitting pants that resembled a billowy sarong, and he was impressively muscled, with tribal tattoos. He looked up at our arrival, did a double take, then frowned at Giselle, holding his finger up as he said to the caller,
"Okay, we've got you down for Monday at 3. Thanks for calling. Okay, bye."
Upon hanging up, his attention lingered on Giselle, then skipped to me.
"Marie?"
I nodded. "Jared?"
"The owner, Rebecca, isn't here right now. She had to go pick up her son, but she's going to try to return before you leave."
His face split with a smile as his eyes moved down, then up my body.
"So nice to meet you."
"I'll bet it is," Giselle mumbled, crossing her arms. Jared's attention shifted to Matt, and he blinked.
"You're the walk-in."
Jared was looking at Matt askance, making no effort to hide his displeasure.
"Yes, I am."
Matt looked at my cuddle partner, then glanced down at himself as though searching for what offended the man. Jared scoffed, blinking rapidly and turning a plainly furious face to Giselle.
"Well, that's just great."
She crossed the threshold into the office, saying to us, "Give us a minute, would you?" Then pulled the door mostly shut behind her. "Really? You're giving me grief about him?" we heard her ask. "Look at her, she's all tits." Matt and I shared another glance, his eyes flickering to my chest, then back up.
"Real nice G," Jared said, sounding equally furious.
"And her hair? She's exactly your type. I should know." Matt grimaced, but it looked like he was trying not to laugh.
"I'm not the one who has a history of being unprofessional."
Jared could be heard saying in a hushed tone,
"Keep your hands out of his shirt."
"They like it when I stroke their stomach." It sounded like she was speaking through clenched teeth.
"You only stroke stomachs with six-packs, and we both know it."
Matt's eyes widened almost comically, a mixture of shock and panic behind his gaze as he pointed to his torso and mouth to me.
"I don't want her touching my stomach."
I gestured to my chest and mouthed back, "I don't want him touching my tits." A hastily repressed laugh erupted from Matt, and he clapped his hand over his mouth to stop it. Despite his valiant effort, the sound drew their attention and the door opened, revealing a furious Jared.
"Is something funny?"
Jared was now aiming daggers at Matt.
"No."
Matt shook his head as though to strengthen his denial, but then abruptly began nodding, his eyes swinging to me and narrowing.
"Actually, yes, there is something wrong."
My lips parted, maybe to refute his claim, maybe to agree with him, I'll never know. In the next moment, Matt had wrapped his arm around my shoulders and addressed our would-be cuddlers.
"The truth is, we're cuddle virgins. And I think, no, I know, I speak for Marie when I say that we're nervous. So we've been talking, and we think maybe it would be best if Marie and I cuddled with each other."
I snapped my mouth shut, my gaze dropping to the floor.
"And you two could take us through the positions. Teach us how to cuddle.
Be our cuddle sensei." Matt finished, his tone beseeching. Giselle and Jared shot each other a look of confusion as she asked, "And we'd still get paid?"
"Of course,"
Matt nodded, his hand sliding from my shoulder to my arm, his big hand warm on my bare skin. Jared glanced at me, asking softly,
"Are you sure that's the experience you want, Marie?"
"He just said it's what they want," Giselle snapped. "You just want to cuddle with her," she added in a harsh whisper. I winced, realizing I would get nowhere with these two. Evidently, they were dating or involved or something. And also evident, they had some major jealousy issues to work through. I wasn't going to get an authentic experience either way. But at least with Matt as my cuddle partner, I didn't have to worry about Giselle stabbing me in the middle of the session. Plus, per Matt's anti-relationship tirade just moments ago, I was fairly certain his interest in cuddling was purely academic. "It's what I want," I rushed to declare, hoping to cut off a rekindling of Jared and Giselle's tiff, my arm lifting to wrap around Matt's torso. "As long as one or both of you can guide us through it." Chapter 9. Siri. Works as an intelligent personal assistant and knowledge navigator, part of Apple Inc.'s iOS, watchOS, macOS, and tvOS operating systems. Source, Apple Computers. Siri. I changed into the shorts and tank top I'd brought for the cuddle session, then met Matt and Jared in one of the rooms I'd spied earlier. It looked like a nondescript bedroom, with a double bed in the middle of the space and a single side table. A solitary candle in a glass holder was burning and provided the only source of light in the room other than the window.
"Marie?"
Jared made a bow to me, his expression open and friendly.
"I've arranged your partner on the bed. He's ready for you." "My body is ready,"
Matt called from his position. I peeked around the man who would be our cuddle instructor to find Matt lying on one side of the bed, facing the door, a droll expression on his handsome face. I blinked once, slowly, mentally preparing myself for what was to come and reminding myself that this was all in the name of journalism. Taking a deep breath, I approached the bed. Should I just mirror him?
"That's right."
Jared waited until I lay on the bed, facing Matt, before he gave further instruction.
"Okay, now I want you two to tangle your legs together, with Matt's staying on the mattress, one of Marie's between Matt's legs, and Matt's upper leg between hers." "That's right. And Marie, lay your head on Matt's forearm. That's it.
Marie, try putting your hand flat against Matt's stomach to create a connection, but over his shirt. Unless, that is, you're both comfortable with skin-to-skin touch.
Over the shirt is fine, I said, and Matt nodded his agreement. No need for things to get too personal. We did as instructed while Jared launched into a monologue. I tried to pay attention, but I was beyond distracted by the solid wall of maleness in front of me, and his leg between my legs, and his ridged abdominal muscles beneath my fingertips. Men who were perpetual kids never made it on my radar. Up until now, Professor Simmons had come across as a big kid, specifically his tendencies to be oblivious, blunt, and stubborn. Yeah, he was handsome, funny, terrifyingly brilliant, but I hadn't been particularly attracted to his personality. But now, being this close, he felt hot and bigger, stronger, imposing, manly. I caught myself swallowing nothing as I had no saliva left in my mouth. He might have acted like a big kid, but he didn't feel like one.
As a general rule, a cuddler and a cuddly should never touch each other in the bathing suit zones. No touching the front of the chest, the buttocks, or the pelvis. Basically, anywhere a two-piece covers on a woman or a bathing suit covers on a man.
A subtle yet sly smile settled over Matt's features, his brown eyes dancing as though thinking of a secret joke. What? I whispered, suspicious, still fighting my flare of hormones. Or, more precisely, hormones. That's what I called my hormones when they betrayed my good sense. Sandra said I was slut-shaming my body's appreciation for the opposite sex. I told her I was okay with that if it meant I remained free of STDs. Matt inclined his head forward so that our noses were almost touching. His breath smelled like peppermint, not overpowering, just enough to betray that he'd snuck a mint, and he whispered,
"I wear Speedos when I swim."
I pressed my lips together so I wouldn't laugh, but ended up laughing silently anyway, as he resettled back into his original position. Trying not to laugh was becoming a habit around him. And thank goodness for his joke, because it helped dispel my sudden case of sexy nerves. Physically, I was beginning to see him as just too ridiculously attractive. Good thing he told you he's allergic to commitment, otherwise you might do something hormony. I could do this. I could snuggle with Matt's large, powerful, hard body and remain focused on documenting the experience for my story. Focus on the story. My mind began to settle. Meanwhile, Matt gave in to his grin, his eyes dropping to my mouth. He had a really nice smile. I liked it when he smiled, how his eyes lit with inner brilliance and tangible enjoyment.
"Now don't be alarmed if one or both of you experience arousal,"
Jared continued evenly.
"That's not abnormal, but it doesn't happen every time. If it does happen, feel free to call for a break. Either of you can end the session at any time. Cuddling must be, at all times, purely platonic."
Matt's smile dwindled by degrees and the mischief dimmed, replaced with something else. I decided it was sobriety, then growing distance, and then eventually careful detachment. Gathering a deep breath, his dispassionate gaze moved over my shoulder, and he stared at the wall behind me. I considered him, his sudden mood shift while trying to listen to Jared's instruction.
"Eye contact can be important in this position, but it isn't necessary. Don't be afraid to move your hands, stroking your partner with an open palm if he or she finds it comforting. You can do it on the arm or the leg, over the shoulder, down the back. Petting can be very comforting."
Matt's jaw flexed, his eyes still affixed to some spot behind me.
fingers in the hair, massaging the scalp, or threading in the hair itself is a technique we use. Matt?
Matt flinched, frowning, his eyes darting up to Jared.
Yes?
Try playing with Marie's hair.
Matt didn't immediately move. In fact, he held perfectly still, but I could feel the tension in his stomach muscles beneath his shirt. Eventually, he cleared his throat and swallowed, his eyes cut to mine, his expression still distant. I twisted my lips to the side.
Don't worry, I washed my hair.
Good, he said distractedly as he lifted his hand even with my temple.
Just before he touched me, I said, last month, giving him a sinister grin. But don't worry, the lice are friendly.
I was pleased to see my teasing had made a crack in his detached demeanor.
He twisted his lips to the side, like he was fighting his own smile, and dropped his hand on my face.
And when I say he dropped his hand on my face, I mean he dropped it, like it was dead weight. Right on my face! With determinedly ungraceful movements, he shoved his fingers into my hair and straightened his arm like he was trying to flick my hair from my scalp. It didn't hurt, but it didn't feel good either, and he looked ridiculous. When I caught his expression, which was equal parts smug and silly, I started to laugh.
Matt's laughter soon followed, and he mimicked his earlier hair flick, making it even more ludicrous by twisting my hair and throwing it in my face.
Like this? He asked, unable to keep the laughter from his voice.
Jared huffed.
No, Matt, you don't put her hair in her face. I think she likes it, Matt said, making me laugh harder.
Jared made another sound of disapproval, and peripherally I saw he'd caught Matt's wrist. With Jared holding one hand captive and the other trapped under my head, I took the opportunity to poke Matt in the ribs, making him jump and squirm.
Hey!
Matt protested.
Okay, wait.
Jared's tone firmed.
Tickling is allowed, but you have to obtain the consent of the other person first.
While Jared spoke, Matt wrenched his hand free and moved it to my side, tickling me in earnest.
Let's see how you like a taste of your own medicine.
I don't need any medicine. I tried to retaliate, but I couldn't because I am and always have been remarkably ticklish.
Circle, circle, dot, dot, he said, laughing.
Not maniacal laughter, more like he was really enjoying himself and was lost in the moment.
Oh, my God, I laughed, twisting, trying to block access to my stomach.
He moved his attentions to my side, but his fingers weren't painful or harsh. They were adroit, applying just the right pressure to make me squirm. Matt rolled me on my back, freeing his other hand and pushing my legs down as I tried to bring my knees to my chest.
Sorry, Marie, can't have your pointy knees near the yarn bag,
he said, not sounding sorry. His use of the phrase yarn bag made me laugh harder. Soon he was straddling my hips, his hands deftly finding new spots at my neck, under my arms, and our laughter was the only sound I could hear.
Okay, okay, truce, truce!
I bowed forward, tucking my arms close to my sides, my hair now wild around my shoulders. Matt's movements stilled, one hand at my neck, the other behind him, wrapped around my thigh at my knee as though poised to tickle the back of my leg. I glared up at him, smiling. He glared down at me, smiling. Both of us were breathing hard.
Truce?
He asked, his chest rising and falling, his gaze dipping to my mouth.
Yeah.
For some reason, my eyes also dropped to his mouth, and I had an incredibly odd thought that moment. I wonder what his lips taste like.
Whoa, just stop right there.
It must have been our proximity, how we were touching each other as though we were familiar. Perhaps my body was confusing proximity with actual intimacy because I'd never touched someone like this without it.
So, as I was saying,
Jared said, effectively pulling me from my meditations on Matt's lips into our instructor's frustrated visage.
Tickling is allowed, but must be approved ahead of the session first. Matthew, remove yourself from Marie, please.
My attention cut back to Matt, who was still straddling me. His eyes were on his hand, where it wrapped around the side of my neck, his thumb pressing against the indent at the top of my sternum.
"Sorry,"
he mumbled, swallowing stiffly, and shifted his weight to one side to climb off my middle.
"Thank you,"
came Jared's curt reply.
"Let's try a traditional spooning position, with Matt being the big spoon and Marie the smaller one. Okay, on your sides."
I released a quiet breath. I still felt a little disoriented by the decidedly unplatonic turn of my thoughts and lay on the mattress, facing away from Matt. For some reason, every sound seemed louder, especially if he caused it. How the springs of the bed squeaked when he moved into position, his soft breaths, the friction of his jeans against the sheets.
"Try to get as close as you can, Matt. There should be no space between you. That's right, put your leg between hers,"
Jared instructed. Soon his front was plastered against my back, the hard muscles of his upper thighs cradling my bottom, his firm stomach at my lower back, his chest against my shoulder blades. One arm draped over me, his hand limp, not touching my body, but I could feel him still moving behind me, as though trying to get comfortable.
"What do I do with this arm?"
I heard him ask, his voice gruff, edged with impatience.
"It's superfluous."
"Good question."
Jared leaned over us, and I sensed he'd taken Matt's wrist again.
"I wouldn't recommend trying to fit it between you. That creates distance and is generally uncomfortable for the small spoon. Instead, you can bend your elbow, like this, and Marie can use your arm as a pillow, or you can use it as a pillow yourself, or you can straighten it and place it under Marie's neck, like this."
Jared encouraged me to tilt my head so Matt could slide his arm beneath me. This idea didn't quite work, as Matt's upper arm was a little too big to fit in the space left by the curve of my neck. "Hey, wait." I grabbed Matt's arm and positioned it so I was using his bicep as a pillow.
"Oh, good. Then maybe put your hand like this, Matt."
Jared took over and bent Matt's elbow again, leading his hand to my upper arm so I was wrapped in his embrace.
"And your other hand can rest on her thigh like this."
Once more, Jared moved Matt until the hand that had been draped limply was flat on my upper thigh. Jared stepped back, tilting his head to the side as he considered us.
"Maybe bend your leg, Marie. Yes, that's it. Is that comfortable?"
I nodded, because it was comfortable. I felt like I was tucked in the cozy embrace of a big, muscular bear. Matt's warmth surrounded me on all sides.
"I like this,"
I heard and felt Matt mutter, the rumble of his chest reverberating through my back where we were pressed together. The words were bemused.
"Why do you sound surprised?"
I whispered.
"Like I said, I'm a cuddle virgin."
Before I could remark on his statement, Jared interrupted.
"Okay, Matt, feel free to nuzzle her back and neck. Or you can stroke her leg or arm, maybe. Is that okay, Marie?"
"Yes, that's fine."
Matt chose my leg. His big palm moved down, then up my bare thigh to the hem of my shorts, and I had to smile because his touch wasn't at all tentative. If I didn't know any better, I'd say it felt possessive.
"And Marie, maybe touch the back of Matt's hand, the one on your arm. Play with it, entwine your fingers, light touches."
"Jared, we need you up front."
A voice I recognized as the hostess called from someplace down the hall.
"Okay, you two practice that. I'll be right back."
Jared's retreating footsteps sounded against the wood floor, eventually leaving us in silence. Meanwhile, I lifted my fingers and softly petted Matt's hand, tracing the bones of his fingers with my fingertips, and then drawing ellipses on the back of his hand, from his wrist to his knuckles. He made a rumbly noise, almost like a purr. It sounded content.
"You like that?"
I whispered, closing my eyes, enjoying the feel of his hand languidly stroking my leg.
Yes,
he said. I grinned. He was quiet for a bit. We both were. And I felt myself relax more and more. His palm took a detour every so often, dutifully skipping my hip and sliding along my side, then back to my leg. Soon I was so relaxed I felt drowsy. I felt fingers in my hair, moving the mass away from my neck with treasuring strokes, just before Matt nuzzled the back of my neck, causing goosebumps to scatter over my skin. I smiled. Hey, Jared said no tickling. My voice sounded sleepy.
Does this tickle?
Matt asked softly, nuzzling me again. I felt the brush of his lips. Not a kiss, a brush, paired with hot breath against the bare skin of my neck, and a zing shot straight down my spine, making my toes curl and a sudden hot ache twist in my lower belly. Oh, no. I knew that ache. I hadn't felt it because of another person's touch in quite a long time. Nevertheless, no one ever forgets that ache. My back arched instinctively, my bottom pressing back against his crotch, and I stiffened. I felt my nipples harden, strain beneath the cotton of my bra. I was now fully awake, no longer drowsy. Nope, not even a little. Matt stiffened too, his movements abruptly ceasing.
Are you okay? What's wrong?
He asked, alarm coating his words, and in the next moment, his hand was suspended in the air above me.
Did I touch something I shouldn't?
I exhaled a short, nervous laugh, gripped by the urge to sit up. No, you didn't. I moved to the edge of the bed, righting myself, away from Matt, needing distance. I'm good. I gathered a silent breath and released it, slowly because my pulse was racing. Crap, Marie, get a grip. It's Matt Simmons. Professor Matt, the big kid. Why are you reacting this way?
Did I?
These initial words were hesitant, and a moment of silence stretched before he continued, his tone comically teasing as he finished his thought.
Did I arouse you?
I snorted, shaking my head, laughing at his silly tone. Turning at the waist to peer at him over my shoulder, Matt was grinning at me, twisting a make-believe mustache between his thumb and forefinger. But then he stopped.
I did, didn't I?
He pushed his hand, dropping. He looked pleased, if not a little amazed. I sighed, feeling a smidge embarrassed, and nodded. Actually, yes, that's a sensitive spot for most women.
The back of your neck?
He lifted himself to one elbow, his eyes darting to my neck with keen interest. My neck in general, actually?
Huh.
Matt frowned thoughtfully.
Where else?
I pressed my lips together and gave him an incredulous look. I'm not telling you that.
Why not?
Matt.
What if I needed it for research reasons?
Matt.
What if I told you it was part of our questionnaire?
He tossed his legs over the side of the bed and stood, walking around to my side and offering me his hand.
You should give me a schematic of your body with the erogenous zones circled and rated.
Let me guess, you want them rated on a 10-point scale. I deadpanned as I accepted his hand and stood, and stepped away to gain some distance and straighten my shirt. He shrugged, crossing his arms, stalking after me.
Or exponential? I was going to say a Likert scale, but a logarithmic scale works too.
Chuckling, appreciative of his attempt to diffuse my embarrassment and awkwardness with the joke, I realized Matt Simmons wasn't a bad guy. He might even be a good guy, just a little peculiar. And wants to replace romantic relationships with robots. Best not forget that detail. Yeah, he'd make an interesting friend. Thanks, I gave him a small smile.
For what?
His eyes moved between mine.
For the cuddle.
Thanks for the cuddle, Matt.
Anytime, Marie.
He grinned down at me, his eyes dancing as he leaned forward and whispered, "Anytime."
Chapter 10. Sophie. Emotional intelligence bot that interacts with patients who have chronic health issues. Unlike some bots made to optimize paid interactions, this one is built to act in your best interests. Source, ID Avatars. Tuesday was a good news, bad news kind of day. I'll start with the bad news. Or rather, the I don't know how to feel about this news. David, my ex-boyfriend, called me. I didn't pick up. The flash of his number on my cell screen paralyzed me. I let it go to voicemail. We hadn't spoken since he'd moved out, and he didn't leave a message this time. I obsessed for the rest of the day about what to do, caught off guard by how much I was obsessing. But then, good news, I received a series of texts from Matt just as I was leaving work.
Matt, if you need help translating the scatter plots, let me know.
Matt,
we should eat while we discuss.
Matt,
dinner?
Matt,
or coffee is fine.
Matt,
I'll stop texting now.
I smiled at the unexpected but not unwelcomed messages. I decided over the weekend that if Professor Matt Simmons was interested in being my friend, I was going to make an effort to make the friendship happen. Because Matt, despite the short time we'd spent together, had me more playful and braver. Shaking my head at the weirdo, I typed my response.
Marie, I do have questions. I've got knitting tonight. How about tomorrow? We can meet for coffee or I can cook dinner.
Even though I'd taken copious notes during our meeting, I was having trouble interpreting the documents he'd given me, so his offer to help was a relief. It would also give me the opportunity to propose friendship. Since I was on a strict budget, eating out wasn't an option. Plus, I had a recipe for coconut curry that would have been silly to make for just one person. He replied almost immediately.
Matt, you cook.
Matt, sorry for my all-caps exuberance. I'm really looking forward to your food.
Matt, I mean, answering your questions.
Matt,
and your food.
I chuckled, tapping out the address to my apartment as I entered the elevator, pressing the button for the penthouse level. I had to juggle the dip I'd made, holding it against the wall with my hip so I could slip my phone back into my bag. It was Janie's turn to host, but with her feeling so wretched these days, the rest of us decided to make and bring the food. When the elevator doors opened, I moved to leave, but took a startled step back, almost colliding with Quinn's business partner, Dan O'Malley. Dan and I had been through a lot together, especially this last year. He, Quinn, and I had bonded while on a trip in the spring to Nigeria to help Greg and Fiona out of a bind, working toward a common goal in close quarters. I was thankful to have these great guys in my life, proving that great guys existed.
Gah! I wobbled, trying to regain my balance.
He reached out to steady me, his beefy hands gripping my shoulders.
You okay there?
Yes, I laughed at my clumsiness and sighed. Long day, sorry.
No problem.
Once he was sure I was stable, he released me and stepped back, motioning me to exit the elevator.
You're the last to arrive.
I figured as much. Frowning, I glanced at the door leading to Janie and Quinn's place. How's she doing? Any better? He shook his head wearily, rubbing the back of his neck where swirling tattoos peeked out from the collar of his shirt. His mouth formed a tired line.
I can't wait until that baby is out. Quinn's been a real son of a bitch, excuse my language, for the last 5 months.
Sorry. I gave him a sympathetic smile. The typically even-tempered Bostonian seemed exceptionally irritable this evening.
It's fine.
He waved me off as he stepped onto the elevator and punched a button.
All I'm saying is, they better name it after me.
Giving him one last departing wave, I turned and strolled down the hall, knocking at Janie's apartment with my free hand. A few seconds later, Kat opened the door, her gaze wide and expectant. But as soon as she saw me, her expression faltered.
Oh, hi, Marie.
She sounded a shade disappointed. I tried not to take it personally. Who were you expecting? She brightened, her smile, waving me forward.
You, of course. Come in.
Taking the dip from my hands, she walked toward the kitchen, calling ahead of her.
Marie brought dip.
Yay for dip, came Sandra's excited reply. Leaving my purse by the door, I grabbed my knitting bag and headed for the family room, happy to see all my friends' smiling faces as soon as I entered. Even Janie was smiling.
Marie, goddess of the dip,
Ashley's voice called from a laptop sitting on a side table.
You'll need to send me the recipe.
I will, I promised.
Hey, Marie.
Nico, a.k.a. Nicoletta, smiled his greeting. He couldn't stand up as his wife was sitting on his lap, as was their way.
Hey, I didn't think you were going to be here.
Kat emerged from the kitchen holding two cocktail glasses and handed me one.
For you, my dear.
Thank you.
Okay, now that everyone is here, I have a question. Sandra held her hands up in front of her and asked the room,
Do y'all think the word Nazi is offensive?
Kat took a seat on the sofa, casting Sandra a cautious glance.
What do you mean? In what context?
Like saying someone is a grammar Nazi.
I can't speak for all Jewish people because, you know, we're all individuals with our own opinions, experiences, outlooks, and whatnot, but it doesn't bother me that much.
Kat paused, twisting her mouth to the side for a beat.
However, I know for a fact it does bother my father. A lot. And his friends.
What do you mean, it doesn't bother me that much? I asked.
I mean, you know, it bothers me a little. Using Nazi as a colloquialism or synonym for fastidious doesn't seem right.
Shouldn't the opposite be true? Shouldn't it mean murderer?
Instead of fastidious about grammar, it should mean one who slanders, murders, and annihilates grammar.
Kat frowned, appearing as though she was wading through a weighty problem.
Now that I think about it, I guess it does bother me.
I'm sorry. Sandra's forehead wrinkled.
Why are you sorry?
Kat tilted her head to the side in question.
Because I've said it before, I know I have. And I didn't mean to be insensitive, but now I know I was insensitive, so I'm sorry.
Sandra said sincerely.
Thanks for apologizing, I guess.
Kat frowned, still looking confused.
I mean, part of me doesn't think you need to, because I know you're not being unkind, but then another part of me appreciates it, and then a third part of me just wants to eat cheese.
I get that. Sandra nodded thoughtfully, especially the cheese part. The irony of the grammar Nazi colloquialism and how many people are now offended by its use is that the usage in that context originates from the TV show Seinfeld. Do you remember the Soup Nazi episode? Janie didn't look up from her work in progress as she asked this.
Can we stop saying the word Nazi, please?
Fiona made a face of distaste.
You just said it, Elizabeth pointed out.
Fiona sent Elizabeth a gently scathing look, if such a thing existed, effectively silencing the younger woman. Or maybe it was her badass ex-CIA look. Or maybe it was both.
I remember that episode, yes.
Kat nodded, sipping her cocktail. Well, about a year before it aired, the term grammar... Janie's eyes drifted to Fiona's, then back to Kat's before continuing,
Grammar, you know what, was coined online in early 1995, but then 10 months later the Soup You Know Who aired.
Some people speculate grammar, you know what, and similar phrases only gained popularity because of the Soup You Know Who episode. And Seinfeld was written by Larry David, who is Jewish, and stars Jerry Seinfeld, who is also Jewish.
Just because it was started by Jewish comedians doesn't mean other Jewish people can't be troubled by it. Or non-Jewish people, or all people,
Nico added.
As entertainers, you're responsible for either raising or lowering the bar.
very true. Elizabeth nodded. And what does your semi-naked jello wrestling on national TV do again? Raise the bar or lower it? Definitely raise it, Sandra said before Nico could respond, then proceeded to trade saucy grins and winks with him. After the episode, the you-know-what word was added to all sorts of things as a pejorative insult. Janie continued academically, as a way to denote a person as an authoritarian, autocratic, or inflexible, one who seeks to impose his or her views upon others, or, in its more literal usage, as you say, a murderer of other humans based on ethnicity and or religion.
See, in that context, it makes sense. Someone who seeks to impose his or her views upon others, just like the you-know-whos did. But to make it synonymous with fastidious or careful or anything else with a positive connotation is upsetting, Kat said.
I also wonder if we as a society have lost our sense of humor, Elizabeth mused. I mean, I read an interview with Jerry Seinfeld where he said laughing at the horrors of history is an effective way to disarm the power it holds. That he and Chris Rock have stopped performing at college campuses because this current generation has no sense of humor and require everything to have trigger warnings. Why do we want the word which Fiona won't let us say, or any word for that matter, to hold power over us?
Or maybe, Kat suggested, it should hold power. And we should never forget the fruit of fascism.
Fruit of fascism should be the name of a band. Elizabeth lifted her chin toward Kat. And you make an excellent point.
This is a tough and complex issue. Sandra, adopting her psychiatrist voice, cut in. Humor can heal, yes, absolutely. But what if you poke fun at a topic that is still fresh, still sore, or that has been made newly sore by recent events? People are, what, just supposed to get over it? No, wrong answer.
Maybe it's a balance, Ashley said, her eyes on the scarf she was knitting. Maybe the answer is, don't be an asshole. Think before you open your trap. Take responsibility for your words. Meaning apologize when you're wrong and correct yourself moving forward and don't constantly look for reasons to be offended and police well-meaning people's words. We want folks to talk to each other, right? Not just hang out with like-minded people all the time. Everyone is ignorant about something and everyone is offended by something. If people can't have a calm, respectful dialogue without being hurt by ignorance or without offending with insensitivity, then what the hell are we supposed to do? Surround ourselves with robots who don't challenge our ideas?
I sat up straight, my gaze darting to the laptop screen at the conclusion of Ashley's rant. What the hell are we supposed to do? Surround ourselves with robots who don't challenge our ideas?
Yes. That struck a chord.
Except, Nico sat slightly forward, causing Elizabeth to shift to the side.
If you're talking about a group of crazy people who are lobbying for the extermination or expulsion of an entire race or religion or other subset of our population, there is no use trying to talk to hate mongers.
Ashley shook her head.
Now see, I disagree. How can you change a person's heart if you don't talk to them?
How about grammar police? Does that bother anyone? Janie asked the group.
Wait, before anyone answers that, is this something we're doing with everything from now on? Is this the new thing for us? To check with each other before we speak here? To make sure that everything that leaves our mouths is free of the potential for hurt?
Sandra's gaze drifted from person to person.
Or can we just, you know, trust each other? We are all friends here, right? We're all doing our best and want to think the best of each other. If I say something jerky or ignorant and not the dried meat kind of jerky, then how about one of you fine ladies just calls me on it? I'll know you're coming from a good place and I'll try to correct my horrible behavior.
Why didn't you say deplorable? Elizabeth paused, her knitting. You can't use the word deplorable now? She looked to her husband for help. Nico affixed his eyes to the crochet hat he was making and shook his head.
Nope, I'm not touching that one.
Don't you two talk? Kat asked, teasingly.
I only see him a few times a month. Elizabeth dipped her chin to her chest. So the last thing we want to do is talk about current events.
Or talk.
Nico mumbled, earning him an elbow in his rib, which only made him smile whiter. It has whitier meaning now than it did last year.
Why?
Elizabeth asked. Fiona and I swapped looks. Elizabeth, on the one hand, I do not envy your schedule of working in that emergency room at all hours, sometimes sleeping at work, never having time to watch Game of Thrones or Buffy reruns. But on the other hand, I do envy your blissful ignorance.
Meanwhile, Sandra sighed, looking beleaguered.
I'm sorry I brought this up. Let's talk about something else. Like yarn. Yarn always makes me happy. Silk never lets me down.
You say that now, but remember those silk gloves you knit? Ashley grinned.
Sandra groaned.
Oh, Lord, don't remind me.
Were those the gloves that grew like 10 sizes larger after you blocked them? I hid my smirk behind my cocktail.
Yes, Sandra bellowed. The gloves could have fit the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. That is, of course, if he'd had fingers.
Did the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man have fingers?
Kat wrinkled her nose, glancing to Janie.
I have no idea, Janie said, shaking her head.
And then the room fell silent, because that might have been the first time anyone had ever heard Janie say, I have no idea. It took us a few moments to recover from the shock, and unsurprisingly, Sandra was the first to speak.
Speaking of not having any idea, did anyone have any idea that Dan split from his girlfriend?
We all followed Dan's love life, yet none of us had admitted as much out loud.
Dan the security man? Elizabeth asked, her gaze swinging to her husband. Did you know about this?
Nico gave his wife an evasive grin and an equally evasive answer.
Honey, if I knew about it, why would I keep it from you?
When did it happen? Elizabeth squinted at Nico, but was clearly trying to keep the excitement from her voice as her eyes darted to Kat, then away. I fought the urge to also glance at Kat, successfully subduing the compulsion, but just barely. Meanwhile, Sandra was pointedly not looking at Kat.
It's true. They did. Split 2 months ago. I just found out about it today.
How did you find out? Surprisingly, this question came from Fiona, and I say surprisingly because she never gossiped, ever.
Alex mentioned it, offhandedly.
Sandra rolled her eyes, like it wasn't the biggest news since Wookiee pajamas.
What happened?
Ashley was leaning forward, her face filled the laptop screen, her knitting set aside.
I don't know the details, because Alex is a crypt of information, but I do know it happened 2 months ago, and Dan was the one to call it off.
Sandra's eyes settled on everyone except Kat.
He called it off?
Elizabeth's gaze jumped back to Kat and remained there, her expression holding some urgency.
Well, someone should comfort him.
Nico suggested quietly, his attention squarely focused on his stitches. Silence filled the room like a vapor, whispering over us, pressing down from every direction. I knew each of us were silently rooting for Kat and Dan to make a love connection. I also knew Dan was all for making Kat his and had been for years. His unrequited affection for her was both beautiful and heartbreaking to watch. Furthermore, I suspected Kat really, really liked Dan. But Kat's tendency to freeze up around him was the main problem. Before his most recent girlfriend, Kat had been painfully shy around him, meaning it had been painful to watch. She barely spoke to him, and whenever he'd been friendly to her, she ran the other way. So frustrating. I was just about to blurt my suggestion that Kat send him a strippergram of herself when Fiona glanced at me, giving me a probing look.
Speaking of relationship shakeups, what's going on with you and Matt?
Who's Matt? Elizabeth glanced at me. Should I know who Matt is? Why do I never know anything?
Matt is Fiona's next-door neighbor.
Sandra crossed her arms.
I thought we didn't like Matt.
Oh, that, Matt. Elizabeth nodded. I thought our assessment was that he fell into the hot asshole bucket of shame, right?
Hot?
Yeah, I guess he is hot. Marie? Janie prompted. I sat straighter in my seat, caught off guard by Fiona's question. An odd sensation I couldn't identify made my chest tight. Nothing is going on with Matt and me. I mean, not really. I asked him to help me with a story I'm writing, and he agreed. I decided saying he agreed would be easier than explaining the details. Why do you ask?
He texted me right before you arrived.
Fiona held up her phone as evidence, something like concern sharpening in her eyes.
Asking me what kind of wine you drink.
Chapter 11. Saucy. S-A-S-I. Semi-supervised algorithm for sarcasm identification. Source, Hebrew University, Israel. Upon arriving home from work on Wednesday, I checked the curry in the crock pot, set the jasmine rice to steam, then changed my outfit 7 times. For me, making a new friend was like the beginning of any new relationship. Befriending someone, like dating someone, was a conscious choice. I wanted to make a good, lasting impression. And, like all relationships, I found it harder to establish new friendships as I grew older. People, especially parents and or working professionals, are busy. Time is a commodity. But it wasn't not just lack of time. My expectations for people matured as I matured, and sometimes to my detriment. I wasn't as playful as I used to be. I wasn't as open to new experiences. The sad truth was, I'd been more open to becoming friends with different types of people when I was younger. More open to people like Matt. Odd people. Exciting people. Playful people. Impulsive people. Artists. Intellectuals. Musicians. Actors. Authors. And now, apparently, brilliant scientists. I was just pulling on a cozy gray sweater with a slouchy cowl neck, which exposed my collarbone and one shoulder, when I heard a knock at the door. Oh, shit. I waved my hands in front of me in a panicked motion, still undecided about my black leggings, but then caught sight of myself in the mirror. Why so nervous? Stop being nervous. It's just Professor Matt. I nodded, feeling better, but still a little worried that my smile would be weird because I wouldn't know how to calibrate its size. My apartment was very small. Therefore, I made it to the door in 10 leaping steps, yanking it open before he knocked again. Matt, I said, out of breath. Marie, he said, grinning, and then he looked over my head into my apartment, his expression morphing into one of awe and wonder as he shoved a bottle of wine and a small package at me. What is that heavenly smell? I smiled at him, and the smile didn't feel at all calibrated. It just felt right. Come in and find out, I said, turning toward my kitchen just a few feet away and eyeing the package he'd brought. What's this? I heard him close the door and sensed him trail after me.
That's a book you should read. I, Robot by Asimov. It should address some of your robot ethics questions.
Huh. Thanks. I placed it above the refrigerator so it wouldn't get messed up.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the wine, by the way. It's one of my favorites. I said as I eyed the bottle, wanting to see if he'd admit to messaging Fiona to ask for wine selection help.
Oh, is it?
He sounded genuinely surprised. He was a good liar. If I had known better, I would have believed his surprise. I faced him, my hand on my hip. Professor Simmons, I know for a fact you asked Fiona for help picking out this wine.
Help is such a strong word.
He hedged, wrinkling his nose and fighting a guilty laugh. You're a stinker. I sent him a mock, chastising look, also fighting my laughter.
Speaking of stinking, you know what doesn't stink? Dinner. Seriously, what is that?
Matt had followed me into the kitchen, even though there was hardly enough room for one person. It's coconut curry.
Coconut is my favorite,
he moaned, peeking around me, and I opened the crock pot. I tried to affect the same tone of voice he'd used about the wine.
Oh, is it? First the cookies, now this. Who told you?
Matt placed his hand on my back, trying to lean over the crock pot. His proximity and the deepening of his voice sent involuntary tingles shivering down my spine. He is just so... Sigh. I stiffened. Oh, no. We can't have that. None of your business. I didn't shift away from him, but every muscle in my body was tense. But you know what is your business? The scatter plots on the table? I needed him to leave the kitchen ASAP so I could put a cover on whatever was causing my unanticipated sexy feels to boil over. Taking the hint, thank God, Matt left my diminutive galley kitchen. Stealing a look at him, I conducted a quick survey of the good professor. Yep, still hot.
Is this where you eat?
He asked, eyeing the small cafe-style table. I had to clear my throat before speaking. Yes, nothing bigger will fit in that space. That's what she said. Damn it.
Yeah, I can see that. It'd be too tight.
Jeez, I had a dirty mind. I left my notes just there next to the printouts. Do you mind going through and noting corrections?
Sure, no problem,
he said, throwing me an easy grin. Thanks. I returned his grin, then turned back to my food prep, my heart fluttering. This wasn't good. These feelings weren't a good idea. I'd had many male friends over the course of my life, and I'd lost a few when one-sided feelings got in the way. Sometimes I was on the side of the unrequited crush, sometimes they were. We weren't even really friends yet, and I was already sabotaging it by having urges. Work. His research and my requests for clarifications dominated discussions over dinner. Well, his research and the transcendently deliciousness of dinner. Clearly his work was his first passion, with food coming in a close second. I could have listened to him talk about Turing and the revolutionary research being done with Google's DeepMind and how to write learning algorithms for artificial intelligence all night. He was different when he spoke about it. Earnest and confident. And the confidence plus the brain behind it was very sexy. I accepted that Matt was transcendently attractive when he spoke about his passions. Yet I successfully repressed any inappropriate urges relating to either his internal or external attractiveness. After dinner, Matt did the dishes while I made new notes on my first draft based on his feedback. Without prompting from me, he pulled the Boston cream pie I'd made for dessert from the fridge.
"I'm assuming this pie is for us to eat?"
he asked. I glanced up from my work, finding him already cutting into it before waiting for my confirmation. "And what if it's not? What if I made it for a neighbor?"
"Then you should write her a note of apology because she's not going to eat it."
Matt pulled two forks from a drawer. Apparently, he'd already memorized the layout of my kitchen and brought my plate over to me.
What are you doing? Is it essential? Can we eat?
He lifted his chin toward my small living room, some 4 paces from where I was working at the kitchen table. Yes. Sure, this can wait. I stood and accepted the pie he offered. We both sat on my love seat because the room had no other place to sit. When I hosted knit night at my apartment, most of the ladies sat on the floor. I used to have 2 big chairs, but it restricted movement and made the room feel overstuffed with furniture. He took a bite, closed his eyes, moaned, then took another bite and moaned again. I watched him. Are you going to moan after each bite? I hoped not, because I'd successfully suppressed flutterings and achings thus far. His moaning wasn't helping.
Maybe.
He spoke around a mouthful, chewed, then swallowed.
Why? Do you have a moaning allergy? Does it bother you?
A little,
I hedged, because bother was one word for it, especially when paired with hot.
It's your fault this tastes so good. Where did you learn to cook?
My mom. I took my first bite, enjoying the bursts of sweet, smooth.